He's a rebel. The Crystals on the chart stayed there for 2 weeks here in this day in 1962.
And Charles, that's your new theme song?
Used to be my theme song. It was, yes. I used to love that song when I was young. Yes.
You're still young, Mark.
I still am. Charles Robinson said that because he's also old like me. Political commentator and Maryland State House reporter for Maryland Public Television. We're joined by E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism here at Morgan State University. Stephen Janis, award-winning investigative reporter for WBFF-TV, that's Channel 45, and co-author of You Can't Stop Murder, Truth About Policing in Baltimore and Beyond and Why Do We Kill, The Pathology of Policing in Baltimore, that he did with former Detective Kelvin Sewell. Good to have you all with us. Oh,
thank you. Hey, great. Thanks for having us, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages. So, what are our thoughts about tomorrow?
Tomorrow will be a beautiful day.
Yes, it will. That's what the forecast calls for.
The sun will come out tomorrow. Well, it's going to be an interesting day anyway. I'm new to politics in Baltimore, so I'm looking forward to seeing how things turn out.
We're going to have to join our national show on Wednesday then.
Well, I'll try to do that, but we're going to be here at Morgan all night covering the campaigns.
I heard about this.
So I don't know how lively I'll be on Wednesday. But I'm looking forward to this. I'm particularly curious as to whether Maryland will elect its first lieutenant governor as governor. And I'm interested in what kind of turnout there is for all the races.
I think turnout, guys, Steve.
Yeah, well, no, we were just looking at, we were debating this before the show, Charles, about the turnout for the, you know, it looks like, I mean, obviously you have the number one was Baltimore County, which from early voting in terms of numbers, but some of the highest percentage-wise were some of the counties that favor Hogan in terms of, you know, Kent County and those counties. But, of course, as Charles was saying, the numbers don't add up. So we were kind of debating whether this is another campaign where it's called close. But in reality, does it become close? Because, you know, if you get around a campaign, you get a lot of buzz, and you get this sort of – but are the numbers there, I think, is the question, the big
right.
question we have to answer.
Right, right, right.
Well, you know, first of all, let me suggest that if you have not done early voting, that you exercise your right to vote.
Too late now.
No, you can go tomorrow.
No, early voting was over Thursday.
But yeah, you can do your on-time voting.
Oh, tomorrow you can vote. Yes,
yes, you can vote.
I said early voting.
Unless Mark, don't tell people they can't vote.
No, they can vote.
I won't suppress the vote.
No. To me, not voting is surrendering.
Right. Well, I want to remind everyone, despite what Mark just said.
I apologize. I'm sorry. I still what you said. It was
that,
my fault, Charles.
That, right. Yes. Please exercise your right to vote if you have not done so.
Yes.
You know, I don't really care who you vote for.
No.
Just do that. Too many people have sacrificed. Now, with that said, let me say that, you know, those who have exercised their vote early are what we call the true believers. Those are the folks who have, for whatever reason, decided that I'm going to make sure my candidate gets my vote is heard. And, of course, they'll be out there on the hustings trying to convince others to come to the polls and vote for their particular candidate. You know, we are in a unique position that, you know, we don't have a Senate candidate that's going to drive this race. We have a gubernatorial race that's going to drive all the other offices below this ticket. And it's important to understand, I think, that at the end of the day, you know, if you sit at home, you really do not have any right to complain.
So but it's clearly, though, that it seems to me that the Democrats in this race, Brown and Ullman, must be a little nervous about the race or they wouldn't be calling in the big guns. And that I think that Bill and Hillary Clinton, President Barack mm-hmm. Obama, and mm-hmm. Mr. Obama coming to Maryland to campaign for him says that the Democratic Party nationally is a
yes.
little concerned about where this race
The first
go.
Glimmer we had of that was just really early on, shortly after the primary, when Brown went completely negative, and we were all sort of scratching our heads in the newsroom, because the assumption was that if he won the primary pretty resoundingly, and then suddenly these negative ads start appearing in like pretty much concentrated form about gun control, et cetera, et cetera. And to us in the newsroom, the idea was, well, they must be nervous because some polls must be showing, or at least internal polls, that there's an issue. Not just, you know, the big guns literally, but if you think about the political advertising that has been running almost consistently, who would have thought that Brown would have gone negative so early and so strong from the onset if they weren't nervous.
Sure. And it's about money. It's about a lot of money that's being floated. Think about this. I don't know what the total number is, but it's going to probably somewhere in the $20 million range for a gubernatorial campaign.
Most of that being spent, if it's that much money, by Brown, because
right.
Hogan's limited by taking state funding. So what is your thought on this, especially in terms of the nervousness of the Democrats if all the big guns are coming into state?
Well, I think you're right that it's a sign of some kind of nervousness, but I think there was absolutely a sign of desperation when the Democratic Party sent out a mailer that essentially was aimed at black voters, and it's pretty much said that a vote for Brown would be a continuation of the civil rights struggle that began in slavery and the Jim Crow days and goes all the way through Ferguson. None of that really represents what Brown himself has ever really publicly stood for.
Or articulated anyway.
So to see that mailer come out was a sign that they're very nervous, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because I think that if the black vote does not come out, and Prince George's County and Montgomery County don't come out strongly for Brown and for the Democratic ticket, even more so than Baltimore City in many ways because of the numbers of people, that's significant. That could hurt.
Let me tell you something that I saw this weekend, and I'm going to refer to Saturday Night Live. There was a skit that they did from a PBS station, so that got my antenna up a little bit. and they joked about what would not make you vote for the president. And what that said to me internally was that, look, if you can tie this race to the president, then you have a sure bet to win. And they've been trying to do that. Conversely, for Hogan, it's about, you know, I'm not like we used to be. And the embodiment of that has been Chris Christie, the governor from New Jersey. Think Chris Christie when you think Larry Hogan.
Well, I think that Larry Hogan probably also brought in Chris Christie because he probably thinks that this is a hero among a lot of Republicans
who don't know Chris Christie.
Maybe they do and they still like him, I'm saying. But you know
those
saying?
Of us in New York know Chris Christie. But, yes, he does represent. He's kind of the way
Rudolph Giuliani?
Giuliani would have been that same character a few years ago. He had a name nationally as a kind of hero who takes no stuff, speaks his mind, and is the good guy going against the bad guys. But if you really knew them, you would know that that's not exactly who they were up close and personal. But that is what Hogan is counting on.
It will be very interesting how this turns out. I mean, a lot of it's going to be based on turnout, and as we keep saying over and over. I'm curious what you think about two of the things that we don't talk about very much, and maybe you don't know how much you guys have followed it or covered it, but the two referendums statewide. The people aren't really following this as much. The referendum number one, question one, government finances, which is creating a transportation trust fund for funding state transportation systems that cannot be rated. They cannot take money out of it to pay for anything else. This is a Republican-led effort.
Yes.
To stop it. And Democrats are kind of pushing back, saying if this happens, then if we have shortfalls, we can't fund our social programs.
This has been a huge issue, especially for Republicans, because roughly their argument has been that about $1 billion was raided from the trust fund over, I think, the O'Malley term to pay for other types of projects other than transportation. And so the concept, when they raised the gas tax, which, of course, was controversial, there was a promise that somehow we have to create a lockbox, because otherwise this money will be used to close a budget deficit. So this has been a big, big contentious issue. And I think when we covered the gas tax industry, one of the main concerns of people were, well, I'll pay the gas tax, but I want to make sure this money actually funds transportation.
Sure. This came from a piece of legislation that tried to thwart this gas tax issue, as Stephen has suggested. What's interesting is that from the polling, it gets favorable approving all across the state.
Because it sounds right.
It sounds right. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that they kind of don't tell you is that Ehrlich did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And right. So you're basically essentially saying, okay, if you're going to put this in the lockbox, remember that you can't do this Democrats or Republicans. But the on the ground level, if you will, a lot of jurisdictions across the state got the money that was taken to repair their roads taken away from them mm-hmm. in these raids. And they had no way to either garner more funds to replenish mm-hmm. their local funds. And they were kind of at the mercy of the state. So that and another issue that's kind of it's going to come up in the legislature that is you're going to see happening is what I call the deal with the devil that Baltimore City made on schools. Mm-hmm. In other words, give us the money early for all the school construction money and the funding so we can go to Wall Street and get that money. And that's another one of those kind of like be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but I think that this particular referendum is really fascinating because it looks like it is picking up steam because it sounds populist and right that this is the money mm-hmm. for the Transportation Trust Fund. You should leave
sounds
it there.
Progressive.
Sounds yeah. progressive.
Well, I'm the one who does not know much about it because I'm still begging that I'm a New Yorker. But what is the downside to this proposal?
Well, the downside, I'm sorry.
I mean, I would just think that, you know, you're having flexibility to use the money in times when you need it for other things. I mean, you know, I don't think any governor or legislator really truly wants to be constrained in any way. You know, that would be my understanding.
So, Chip, part of it is that if you have the funds dedicated specifically to transportation, that you can't use it for other things.
So what's bad about that?
Well, the problem is that things come up. Mm-hmm. To give an example, they still are rating the rainy day funds. In fact, this year, I know there were questions about whether or not we should implement some of the taxes in lieu of the rainy day fund. And the Governor O'Malley at the time says, no, that's not what you can use it for. But each governor picks yes. what I call the winners and the losers. In other words, I can say I'm going to take money from the rainy day fund, or I can say I can take money from the transportation fund. In some years, you take money from both of them.
Or the pension fund.
So what this means is, I mean, you can look at it one way, two ways, it seems to me. One, it means that if there's a shortfall in revenues and they can't pay for all the social programs that different communities want.
Whatever was in the budget.
Whatever's there, that they go to trust funds, whatever those trust funds might be, could be the land trust to buy land in rural areas, could be the transportation fund. They take money out of there and they use it to fill the gap in the budget and then try to fill the holes back mm-hmm. later. So and so the Republicans say no, keep it there, which is one way of saying we hate social programs and don't want the money going there. On the other hand, it's saying we need transportation money, should be kept in there. And this also, I think, in some ways, if it passed, will really heighten the fiscal contradictions mm-hmm. of the state's future because it will say the state cannot pay for these things. What are we going to do?
Right.
So I think this. I mean, it's they locking the box opens a Pandora's box.
did you just coin that?
I put that on a bumper.
You like yeah. that.
But you know, it probably a vote for this though would be an indication of just how much the public does not trust the legislature to do
exactly.
anything. And so I can easily see people saying, let's put some checks in place and we'll deal with these other issues as they arise.
We'll take a very quick break. Come back and let my dear friend over here have his say. When we come back, Charles Robinson, when we come back, we're going to go to break with Jerry Lee Lewis. Great Balls of Fire, 1957. Jerry Lee Lewis. Be right back. All right, Caribbean Queen, No More Love on the Run by Billy Ocean. Top the Shop starts today for 2 weeks in 1984. Another piece of music day history. So here we are with E.R. Shipp, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist in residence, and associate professor of journalism at the School of Global Journalism here at Morgan State University. Stephen Janis, award-winning investigator reporter for Channel 45, WBFF-TV, and Charles Robinson, political commentator, Maryland State reporter for Maryland Public Television, and you at 410-319-8888. Please join in this conversation. Charles, you were going to say what?
Well, one of the things that the reason why they want to kind of put this thing in place is because remind yourself that the governor presents a budget to the legislature, and all the legislature can do is cut. It cannot add anything. And because of this, this puts a what I would call a restraint around whoever the next governor is going to be as to what he can do as far as moving funds around.
It's going to be very tough for this government. If this passes, it'll be very tough to put the budget together.
Right.
Really tough.
You can put the budget together, but remind yourself, then you've got to justify literally the programs that you want to fund.
Right.
They should do that anyway, though.
Yeah, well.
I'm going to say this.
I'm going to say this with all due respect to you, but guess what? They've been doing this since the state was started.
But at some point
we have to change and say, let's start doing it differently and better. It just happens to be on the watch of whomever, right?
Mm. Right. It's a very tough political question, I think, but it does show – go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, and when I interviewed people about this, just doing the street reporting, when you call something a gas tax and you add it on and the money doesn't go to building roads and you sort of have this bait and switch, it just never really plays well in terms of people's perception of good governance. I mean, you can't really ignore the fact that you're calling it a gas tax, even if you want to have the flexibility. I mean, I found a lot of people who didn't support the idea of a gas tax because they were conscious of the fact that the money hadn't been spent as intended.
Right. So, the Republicans have an argument in this, and I think it's a very interesting referendum. Well, the other referendum, very quickly, permits a county charter to provide for filling vacancies in county executive offices through special elections. I think this is an interesting one, too, because right now state central committees have this power to appoint. And a lot of people are saying that there should be new elections held if someone has to leave office for whatever reason.
Part of the reason why the opponents to this referendum say that would mean we would have elections on odd years or when there's not a whole lot of things going on. I mean, you can look at other states that have said that they wanted to have these elections for every office there is, and the Board of Elections ends up having elections like every 6 months. Because someone resigns, and the rule is that you must fill the vacancy within 3 months, 90 days, and that becomes an issue. But conversely, I think the people who are proponents for this issue will argue that we should have a say in who represents us, and I think that sometimes is a good argument because you don't want what I call cronyism. I don't think you want
people looked at like the election that just took the appointment.
I mean, that was very controversial because they come up with a whole new system, and according to the people, well, there was a lot of controversy about the fact that Jack Young just pretty much picked who he wanted, even though there was ostensibly a committee that was supposed to look at, you know, comprised of people from the community. So no matter how, it seems to me covering it like on a local level, no matter how you construct it, there's always issues when it comes to internal appointments.
And even though it might cost a bit of money, the question is why should we be afraid if someone has to leave office for whatever reason?
Right.
That there shouldn't be an immediate local election where people can choose who they want to have replace the person rather than having to be appointed by somebody in political power. I mean, that's the heart of this thing, I think.
You could have a system where, of course, someone is appointed temporarily and then have the election at whatever the designated time is. But when you think about it, it's just one more opportunity for people not to exercise the rights that they're not exercising already. And you begin to wonder about the expenditure of money for these elections that no one is really participating in.
Right.
In theory, though,
14 to 15%.
In theory, though, I think the people ought to have the right to vote on these officials.
But you make a really good point, because if you look at the past couple mayoral elections, it hasn't breached like 20% participation.
12%,
so what if you, 12,
right.
Was it 12%?
Right. Wow.
12. So if you talk about having an off-year, off-time election for city council president, let's say, you know, Jack Young retires or something. I mean, can you imagine what the percentage would be in that type of election
and
the logistics?
And I think that there is some school of thought that says that you must have elections in a timely time as opposed to June 15th, as opposed to on November the 4th. I think everybody knows that in November there will be some type of election.
Yeah.
And that is the consistency of that process. However, I don't think that always ensures a strong voter turnout. And, and I think that we sometimes forget that if we don't exercise this right, we get the people that we get.
I think it should be a chauffeur down the line. I just saw a thing pop up that Rolling Stone magazine just on the cover has Barack Obama on the cover.
It's doing what?
Saying that he is the most successful president in the United States in U.S. history.
Most successful.
Yeah.
While his popularity rating, we're being told, is tanking.
Right. It's interesting. But that thing should be a show maybe for another day. That'd be an interesting one.
Yeah, that would be a long show.
Yeah.
But interesting.
But interesting. Yeah. So I'm curious. Let me come back to Baltimore for a moment and talk about the two races that we've covered here in the last week. One is for state's attorney with Russell Nevenon's write-in campaign. Marilyn Mosby being on the ballot, having beaten Bernstein. And the other is this new uproar in the 40th District since the videos came out of a delegate, Frank Conway, he's going to junior, these very strange, rambling, kind of off-the-wall videos. I mean, I'm saying that because that is, if you watch them, it's hard not to say that. And then Sean Turan saying, okay, I'm running again as a write-in after he came in fourth in the primary. So what's the scuttlebutt on the street?
Well, the scuttlebutt is, you know, that Frank Conway has been the best-kept secret of Baltimore City. You know? I mean, it's not like this is news. I mean, anybody who's been around City Hall knows he's been an eccentric, and it makes eccentric statements.
And if you've been in Annapolis, you know he can have extremes.
Right. So why are the people just discovering that?
It's the name.
That's a great question. I mean, it's not like you can find in some sort of political conveyance. It's been more of his personality, you know, and the fact he was posting these videos, I think. And Julie Sharper wrote a great article in The Sun, and people sort of, for the first time maybe, and of course the Conaway family has been controversial in the fact that it's so ensconced, you know, and also the fact that they seem to, no matter, you know, they've kept hold of the clerk of the courts, the, what's it called, the recorder of wills.
Register
they sort
wills.
Of built a dynasty that has been looked at as sort of old-school Baltimore politics, you know.
It is old-school Baltimore politics.
And in a sense entrenched to the point where, you know, as the community changes, the dynasty doesn't change, so to speak. So he's kind of looked at someone who has been benefited from the Conaway name and elected, but not been someone who's been considered to be active, I guess. You know, I mean, I don't follow him down there, but I know in City Hall he's active.
Let me talk about this delegate race, because Tarrant is a delegate currently, just as Conway is. These are kind of slam dunk, what I call blanket tickets that used to go out. In other words, you have a Democratic group, and the three of them run. There's usually a senator at the top of that, and basically everybody checked everyone down. But this year, when they redrew the districts, they put some people in other people's district, and that's what happened with Tarrant. He was shoved into a district that included Conaway and some others, and you needed three to come out of that. Sean came out in fourth.
Right.
And what ends up happening, and, you know, let me tell you, it's long odds as a write-in candidate. And I've been on record with this. You know, you asked me once before on the show about Russell Nevenon as a write-in candidate.
Yeah.
And seeing Sean, I asked him before he came on your show, what are the odds? What are your odds? What are you feeling?
Yeah.
And you know, guess what? He's positive. That's great. But guess what? It is a difficult proposition to do a write-in candidate.
Write-in is always very tough.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Nevenon has his 10-year-old son in a video telling us that it's not that complicated. It's 1, 2, 3. That's what the video says.
And actually, write-ins have never been easier.
There's only one write-in candidate that's won, and it's Lisa Murkowski up in Alaska.
No, I understand that.
But it's very easy now.
It's very easy now to write in, though.
And you can educate your potential voters with YouTube videos, as Mr. Nevenon is doing.
But, you know, Marilyn Mosby ran a pretty strong campaign and I think surprised people with the margin of her victory over Bernstein. I think that, so I would give her pretty much 100% chance of winning this race. I mean, she is.
I think that's true for her case, but I think in the 40th district, it's a possibility.
There may be some angst out there.
Let's remember Belinda Conaway lost her city council seat after blogger Adam Meister exposed the fact that she had signed an affidavit that she owned a house in the county. And so the Conaway family is beatable. And they were beatable in that situation. That's where Nick Mosby sort of made his and started this new dynasty, I guess you could say, in
a way.
Well,
if you look at the potential voter turnout and the numbers that Tarrant would have to garner in order to win, the number's very low. It may be somewhere less than 1,000 votes. Yeah. Maybe somewhere south of 1,000 votes.
That's doable.
And guess what? That means that you got to get him, Dem, and the other of them to vote.
Right.
get a couple of major super churches to decide that they are going to support him.
Absolutely.
That could be the difference.
So it'd be interesting to see how this plays out tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of the races we will watch tomorrow.
The Conway race is going to be the most interesting race because it's sort of a referendum on the city's past versus present versus future.
Well, let me ask you, Mark, what's a race that you want to watch tomorrow?
Other than
the big ones, are there anything, because I'm looking at what's going on in Frederick. That's going to be interesting.
We'll talk about that one. There's also one on the Lower Eastern Shore.
Yes.
That could unseat Senator Mathias, a state Democratic leader. Like he could be unseated by McDermott, who is running a grassroots Republican campaign with very little money but picking up a lot of steam. It could replace a very powerful figure in that place.
And in Anne Arundel County, there is the county executive race and the one that involves the guy who is wants to do the separation from I can't even think of his name.
I can't.
He wants to become the Southern Party, and that.
He became part of this. He was running, but he was part of this old line racist party.
Right.
I can't remember. Right. He will not.
Right. That's one of the races.
He wouldn't
that you
resign
want to
his membership.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In this. Right. Yes. Exactly. Right. Right.
And look, there are things to watch tomorrow.
Well,
and there are trends to watch because some people will suggest that. As the national elections go, see how Maryland fits into that overall narrative.
That is going to be really fascinating. I mean, you have the Republicans sort of with momentum. Will that translate into Maryland? It never has, but maybe it will this time. You know?
Right. Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Right. It is hard to
say. What are you watching tomorrow, Chip?
Well, I'm going to be watching all of our students running around Baltimore tomorrow.
Let me take a quick digression. This is really interesting. I didn't know about this until I ran into one of your colleagues this morning telling me about this thing the students are doing. So what are the students doing here, Morgan?
Well, this is going to be fun, I think. In fact, Charles Robinson is involved in this, too.
Uh-oh.
We decided that because we have a nice new digital newsroom, it might be nice to try to create a sense of a newsroom during election time. So we, some of the faculty, have decided that we would each faculty members' class would take on a particular race or a particular issue. So we've got about 100 students running around doing something related to the elections. We're looking at the governor's race, of course, but we're looking at what's happening in the city. So we're focusing on the state's attorney's race. We're looking at the 40th district race. I think we may be looking at City Council District 11. And just giving the students a sense of what it's like to cover government.
That's really important.
Some of them are coming along reluctantly, but I think some of them now are getting a sense of this is going to be fun. So we're going to be here all night tomorrow, just as we would in a regular newsroom, and we'll have experts coming in and out. Not only will we be doing this for our newspaper, the MSU Spokesman, but we'll be doing it for an urban project that Mr. Robinson is working with called We Connect You that's focusing on West Baltimore.
I made a joke about a minute ago, but let me be very serious. That having Charles Robinson involved in this, I think, is really important. I mean, you've been covering state politics on television for how many years now?
30 plus.
He's
a legend.
He's
a legend.
But you have, as we say, a bottom to this. You've been this around doing this a while. So I think your kind of expertise with these students is really cool. That's taking place here at Morgan with you. I think that's really good.
Well, let me tell you, I always
and have also fun. A national leader of the NABJ, right. National Association of Black Journalists.
That's true, yes.
One of the fun parts of me is to find the next generation of young people who want to do this business. As we all know, we were all young at one point in our lives.
Some of us still are.
Speak for yourself.
And someone, as I jokingly like to say, took a chance on each one of us and said, hey, let me give you a shot. And so part of what I feel the obligation to is to make sure that there's somebody. Because, you know, at some point my television career we're in, and I'm okay with that. But I also recognize that there's a chance to create the new stars of tomorrow. Yeah. And so that's the fun part about it. We actually get started today. So when I leave you, I'm going to be headed down to the harbor to hook up with Mr. Hogan. And hopefully we're going to have some students with us with that. And
but
then,
Charles, I have to tell you, some of us started before today.
Okay, all right.
So we have some stories.
So did I.
We have some stories already posted
right.
on the state's attorney's race and on the Democratic Party's efforts to get voters out.
Sure.
So to put in a plug, The Spokesman is a student's newspaper, and it's themsuspokesman.com. And our urban journalism project is called We Connect You, the letter U, .info.
And just so that everybody can, you can follow us online. My Twitter handle is C3Newsman. We have two hashtags that we're using. We're going to be using MD Politics, and the other is?
Morgan Votes.
Morgan Votes. So if you follow us on Morgan Votes, you can find out what we're posting and where we're posting it.
I love this. I'd be very curious also to talk to some of the students in days after the election and see what their experiences were like, to hear their thoughts. It'd be really great to hear them. But go ahead.
You were talking about what we're looking for. I mean, as a reporter who's covered elections, they always seem to be so inevitable. You know, like one, the prediction is the machine gets operating and whoever's supposed to win wins. And I'm going to be looking for something dynamic where the electorate sort of does something unpredictable, which I'd like to see in Maryland because as a reporter, you just want to cover something interesting. And so dynamism is sort of like what I hope that will occur at something. Not that I want to see anybody win or lose, but I would like to see the electorate do something unpredictable.
Buck the trends, as I like
to call it. Somewhere in the state, somebody does something which isn't already been preordained.
Well, you know what?
Which it's just what seems to happen.
Somebody would think some of these elections we've had, like that Mosby's election, Marilyn Mosby's.
That was a good one.
Was an upset. People in the beginning thought there was no way that Bernstein could lose the election.
Including Bernstein.
And previous to that election, people didn't think Bernstein was going to beat Jessamy, which was, again, another dynamic race, which was interesting.
Right. Sure. And let me talk about state races that are kind of interesting. Doyle Neiman down in Montgomery County was kicked out, and he's trying to get back in. He was the guy who everybody thought was a shoe-in and didn't make the cut. Yeah. And you will get a number of these types of races, and that's part of what we want to do is to kind of delve into some of those kind of races that you don't get on the front page of the Sun or you don't see on the front pages of the BAO.
We're going to spend an hour or at least part of the show on national issues and part on the local, depending on these elections turn out and what happens on Tuesday, so we can hit both because the national elections are going to be pretty they could be alter the political landscape of this country.
And you think about what's going on in Kansas, you see what's going on in Kentucky, you see, you know, the fact that a nun could win in Georgia. Can you believe that?
Well, not a nun.
You know, like Sam Nunn.
Not a holy lady kind of nun.
Got to be clear about what you're saying here.
It's a double entendre, Mark. You missed it.
But the Georgia race is interesting because if neither of one of those people gets a majority, then there is a runoff.
Mm-hmm. Which same thing in Louisiana. And that to me is probably one of the more curious things that we, even though we may have some results tomorrow evening, we may be waiting to see what that result will look like when it comes to the makeup of Congress.
And at least in the 40th district, if they can kind of, they will not tally all of those write-in votes they can, and plus their absentee ballots. We may not know the official outcome for that race, or even the state attorney's race, really, until a week later. That's all possible as well.
Yeah. And like I said, there are all kinds of interesting races in the state. You think about what's going on in Howard County with the county executive race. Kittleman has been endorsed by the Sun Papers, and the Democrat has started to pour more money into that race down in Howard County, the Howard County county executive race, and that's made it a real kind of test of whether or not Hogan pull Kittleman over the edge and give him the win, and is that where the divide is to whether or not a Republican winning
in Howard County would be significant.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's one of the key pieces of the puzzle for Hogan, right? I mean, other than Baltimore County and Arundel, he needs to do something in Howard County to win. He has to.
Right.
He has to do something significant. I mean, if you look, Baltimore County was 51,000 early votes, and PG County 46, and Anne Arundel 38. And then Howard County, there's this 11%. So it's one of the fifth highest turnout for early voting. So he has to do something there, I think. I mean, to win the race. So, that actually could be even more of a battleground county than Baltimore.
Let me interrupt you both because we have only like 7 minutes left in the segment, and Republican candidate Larry Hogan has called in. Larry, welcome to the show. Good to have you back on the air with us.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
How are you doing this last day before the primary? I mean, before the general.
Well, we're keeping pretty busy, I can tell you that. We're just trying to get out there and reach as many last-minute voters as we can.
Hey, Larry, Charles Robinson here. Talk to me about your efforts out in Howard County. I've just kind of predicted that that's going to be where you're going to have a showing in order to make this work.
Well, you know, we're working hard everywhere. You know, we're up by about 20 points in Baltimore County, and the good news is the Brown campaign has given up on Baltimore County and pulled all their troops out and sent them to Howard because we're up by a couple of points there as well. Even though Ken Ullman is the county executive, and we got endorsed by the papers in Howard County, and we got a tremendous grassroots effort going there. But we're trying to win everywhere.
You
going to
get any coattails for your colleague Kittleman?
I believe we are going to get it done. Yeah, it's a close race in Howard County, but I think there's a great possibility of Alan Kittleman being the next county executive.
So if Baltimore County is not like the
Steve Janis from Fox 45,
what do you see as a key battleground right now for, you know, in terms of your winning this or whatever? What's the key county now for you?
You know, they're all important, and it's about getting our turnout out as high as possible in all of our counties. So we're trying to work hard. We're spending most of our last closing days in Baltimore City, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County. Howard County, but we're really trying to get as many votes out in each county as we can, and we're doing better than expected in every single county.
This is E.R. Shipp. How are you doing among Democrats? Are you really wooing them? I see some of your ads that indicate you have some support among people who've never voted Republican before.
Well, you know, the latest polls, the two polls in the past week have us up by either 3 or 5 points, so obviously we're winning over a large number of Democrats and independents all across the state. My group, Change Maryland, has 125,000 people as of today. Half of them are Democrats. And every single day, everywhere I go, in every single county, almost all day long, I have people that come up to me and say, I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I've already voted for you. Or I've never voted for a Republican in my life, but I'm pulling your lever. People are just frustrated with the direction of our state.
So I'm curious, when you say that you were up 20 points in Baltimore County, what poll did that come from?
There's two polls that are out just recently, the RGA poll and our internal poll.
RGA?
Republican Governors Association.
Republican Governors Association poll?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen any kind of I'm surprised how a few polls I've seen come out on this race in the last few days that are not kind of partisan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there have only been two polls in the past 10 days. I understand that Brown's poll shows us 5 points up, but I haven't actually seen that. But that's what our poll shows, and it's what the national polls are showing. Real Clear Politics just this morning changed the status to a toss-up race, and the Cook Report a couple of days ago changed it to a toss-up race, and Politics One is now showing it as a pickup for the Republicans.
So before I know you have to roll, Larry. So what is your day like? Tell us your day.
Oh, we're just busy all day. We're doing a lot of media. We're in Baltimore City, and we're going to spend most of the day here. And later in the afternoon, I think we'll be in Howard, Montgomery, and Anne Arundel counties as well.
Well, we look forward to talking to you Wednesday morning.
Great. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. It's good talking with you.
Always good to talk to you. Take care. Larry Hogan is, of course, a Republican candidate for governor.
Yeah, that's interesting. He's spending his time in Baltimore City, you know. That is very interesting.
And part of that, I think, is...
Why is it interesting?
Well, I mean, you think he would concede Baltimore City, that there wouldn't be anything to gain. You know, that we'd be focusing on other, I don't know, Anne Arundel or Howard. But, you know, Baltimore City usually tends to vote pretty much. I mean, O'Malley took Baltimore City, I don't know, 3, 4.
Sure. It's difficult to win Baltimore City, but what you want to do is minimize the overall vote. In other words, if you're going to, this is where the numbers are. The numbers aren't in way the heck out in Western Maryland.
Are you saying minimize or convert?
Maybe I'm not explaining it right. In other words, so you need to skim off some of that vote.
Right.
Right now, it's probably going to be 95% Democrat. Mm-hmm. But if you can get that down to 96, that gives you a better than average chance. Okay. And that's what I'm saying, minimize what the percentage is.
I understand.
And yes, there are people who are disgruntled. I hear them. I hear them on your show, Mark.
I hear them too, but you know, I also heard all this about the people being disgruntled in the black community going to vote for Ehrlich and it didn't happen.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, right.
Exactly.
So
that's
how
exactly
powerful
the point.
A voice is somebody like a Donnie Glover who is consistently saying for a long, long time on his Be More News that he's been a longtime Democrat, and he is now going to support Hogan.
One of a few. as I like to call it. And, you know, like Donnie personally, he and I hang out and I appear on his show often. And part of that is this disgruntledness with the what I call the guilt by association. In other words, people have said, I'm just tired of Martin O'Malley, and Brown is associated with, so I'm tired with him.
But as Mark points out, that's been the narrative for the past couple elections, and it never bears out in the numbers that I've seen.
Right. You
know? I mean, that's a constant narrative. It's all going to happen. People are going to shift. And
I think it's part of that angst against the Democrats and Brown is also fueling Neverdon's campaign. Not saying Neverdon's running as a Republican, not at all. I'm saying but that some of those same voices are the ones who are saying Neverdon is the alternative.
But the numbers don't add up.
No, they don't.
And you know, people don't like it when I say, well, writing candidate has about a 4% chance. That's about it.
Well, we're looking forward to have some of you all back on Wednesday. The ship will be sleeping. I know I'm getting some rest on Wednesday.
She's going to sleep here, Mark. Don't worry about that.
We'll have her back on soon. But as well, E.R. Shipp's always an honor to have you in the studio. Thank you so much. I'm really happy you're at Morgan State University. You bring a lot to us. Thank you. To you. Charles Robbins is here, who is
a pleasure to be with you, Mark.
MPT, longtime friend. And Steve Janis, also longtime friend, award-winning journalist for WBFF-TV and one-time music producer. We'll talk about that on another day.
Yes, we can if you want.
We can. We will.
Yes.
I just got a message about that, so
okay.
I'll leave it there for now.
Okay.
So, reminding you on the way out of here, please vote. Not to vote is to surrender.
Please vote tomorrow.
Tomorrow. That's what I'm saying. Tomorrow. Not today. Tomorrow. I'll say it again tomorrow. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our intern is Sienna Greaves. You can hear this show again, podcast our past shows, find information about the topics we talked about by visiting steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes on your favorite podcast app. And hearing me right now, under me now, is Danny and the Juniors. On this day in 1957, hit the charts at the hop. And from Public Radio WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Vote tomorrow. Take care.